I've always been known as somewhat of a blind actor. And it feels like this is not even on. Is it on? Oh, good, good. Thank you. Usually I get a little bounce back and I'm not hearing anything. I've always been what some people call a blind actor, not a person without sight, but a person who acts from the gut, makes choices based more on feelings in the gut than thinking in the head. In some ways, I'm lazy. I rely on the playwright and director to do the thinking for me sometimes. I consider the situation I'm in, the characters with whom I am in a scene, the large questions that we face as a community, and then I act on my guts. This has long been the way I am in the stage and in the world. I'm a creative learner who depends less on logic and memorization and rely more on metaphor and relationship and abstractions to make my way through life. In the rehearsal process, I must work things over and over and over again until I find what feels right. When I find what feels right, or rather, when what feels right finds me, I know, and I know that I know. I tell a story about being a young actor working with Maxine Kline. I had cut my teeth on the stage doing 3 seasons of Summer Stock. College Light Opera Company had been the summer resident company at Highfield Theater in Falmouth, Massachusetts on the Cape. Originally, it was a project of Oberlin Conservatory, but later, some Oberlin alumni recreated it as Clock, with a company of 32 singers and 18 members of the orchestra and set and light and costume crews of another 18 or so, a box office and a production staff of 6, and guest conductors and directors and coaches, another dozen people or so. We all lived together in a small inn in West Falmouth, and we were never far from the sea. We also were never far from work. We had a 9-week performance season each summer, and in those 9 weeks, we did 9 shows. Old-time Broadway shows and Viennese operettas and 3, count them 3, every summer, Gilbert and Sullivan's. We'd have a Sitzprobe rehearsal with full orchestra every Saturday afternoon, 2 technical rehearsals on Sunday, dress rehearsal on Monday, opening on Tuesday, 1 show Wednesday, matinee and evening on Thursday, evening show on Friday, and Saturday after the Sitzprobe, the evening closing and strike. Whenever we weren't performing, we were rehearsing. Rehearsing next week's show while performing this week's show, and then learning our audition pieces for the next 2 shows coming up. In our spare time, we practice our chorus numbers and our soliloquies, our ensemble pieces, and we depended on each other for honest feedback about the work that we were doing. It was a crazy, exhilarating, impossible schedule, and it was wonderful. One prepared by learning substantial parts of the roles you would like to sing. So coming prepared might mean showing up in June, knowing Younger Than Springtime from South Pacific, Golden Days from the Student Prince, The Flowers That Bloom in the Spring from the Mikado. One prepared for a season by filling a great trunk with props and shoes, jewelry and wigs, boots and hats, anything that might help you connect as an actor with the characters you hoped you might be able to perform. One prepared with dance steps and learning how to tie the bow tie, the right tie for the right period, foreign accents and mannerisms of both upstairs and down. When I began to work with Maxine Kline, she told me that I was not prepared. She saw lots of expertise in me, but my expertise was entirely in things that were external. She saw little consideration by me of who I was at my core. It was Maxine who gave me an exercise, an improvisation on a speech by socialist leader Eugene Debs. "Your Honor, years ago I recognized my kinship with all living beings, and I made up my mind then that I was not one bit better than the meanest on earth. I said then, and I say now, that while there is a lower class, I am in it. And while there is a criminal element, I am of it. And while there is a soul in prison, I am not free." Maxine said I would never be prepared, at least never be prepared for her socially relevant class and gender conscious, struggling and liberationist theater, until I knew where I stood, until I knew who I was, until I know where I came from, until I knew with whom I identified, until I wanted passionately to accomplish something in the world. Now, the first character I needed to find for Maxine was a waiter, a guy working in a dump of a bar room, scraping by and not sure where the next buck would come from. I find this rather ironic because the way this Ivy League college graduate, this son of a working class family, was making a living those days was as a waiter, scraping by and not sure from week to week how far the tips would stretch. And worse, becoming an actor would mean that I'd lose out on those Friday and Saturday night shifts, the big nights, with lots of hard work, yes, but lots of money. Choosing to work in the theater and preparing so to do would require greater creativity, harder work, more frugality, more trust. I moved into a collective household and learned to depend on kindnesses extended by other hardworking but basically poor people. I learned of college classmates who were moving up and up and up in their careers, but I knew in a deep place that my passion was here in the meaningful theater experience that at that time was telling a waiter's story, the character Zach's story, and my own story too. I prepared as I could to play the part I otherwise knew so well. What I was not prepared for were the changes that happened in my dream life. The more I sought not just to feel my feelings and express my character's feelings and intentions, but to understand why he was who he was, why his family lived in the places it lived, why his friends had the educational employment opportunities or not that they had or not, the more I needed to face my own truth. And when I thought my head so filled with Zach's data was ready to explode, my preference for metaphor and imagery and relationship, for feelings and intuition, broke through into my dreams. I dreamed big, bold, green dreams, flourishing plants and bright sunshine and vibrant, shimmering air. I dreamed of athleticism, of running and soaring and breaking through. I dreamed of being 7 years old and being taught by my dad how to play first base. I felt the difference between the lawn right here and the street over there. I felt the difference between the garden and the stone that was the first base. I saw the difference between my story about being abandoned by my dad with his overwork and his alcohol and being embraced by him. Father teaching son, loving and caring and teaching and congratulating. I dreamed big, bold, green dreams. I was not prepared for being the actor I needed to be, but I found that my search for truth prepared me, that my openness to the possibilities ahead of me prepared me, that my reliance on the company of colleagues and co-workers and comrades prepared me to be about accomplishing great things. The lesson from Matthew's gospel that we read earlier gives us a warning. The foolish leader sets out to build a grand home. He has the resources to construct something quite amazing, but he does not pay attention to the home's foundation. Built of sand, the foundation washes away when inevitable, unavoidable storms come. The wise leader with a similar vision and the same resources sets out to construct her grand home. But she is wise in that she pays attention to her foundation. She knows that all her valuable resources will be lost if she does not pay attention to her foundation. And so she takes the time and care to be sure that she builds on bedrock, on an unshakable foundation. The same storms come, the same devastation is delivered. But she and her home survive because she knew that she needed to prepare. Our congregation is at the beginning of our preparations to be the actor we want to be in Baltimore and in the world. We are at the beginning of imagining with specificity the scope and scale of our bicentennial celebrations in 2017 and 18 and 19, the celebrations that will recognize our community as an historic center for liberal religion and human progress, that will enhance our capacity as a place for human development through worship and study, that will secure our role as a cathedral church that collects the energy and witness of Unitarian Universalist congregations in this region and connects us with each other and to the source of our liberating vision, powerful church speaking with power to power. We are preparing to be the actor who will fulfill the role that this moment and our own congregational personality calls us to play. We prepare in part by having a successful stewardship campaign next month. You and I will gather in homes for cottage parties that will celebrate who we are, that will give us a chance in an atmosphere of fun to encourage one another, to teach and learn and to love one another. This will be a way that we can speak into the truth of our lives and the true life of this church. I hope after our service today that you will visit the stewardship table in our fellowship hall to learn more about our parties, the parties we're going to have, and our plans with one another for next year, and our dreams that are becoming more concrete for 4 years and 5 years and 6 years and another century of us. The play that we will perform is yet being written. Indeed, we are writing it, and we are called to prepare. A journalist once asked Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. what he thought about the fact that actors played such a prominent role in the civil rights movement. The journalist's implication was that it might be far more effective and maybe more dignified if other kinds of professionals were more visible in the movement. Dr. King answered without hesitation that he could think of no group of people better suited to the cause of civil rights. Are not actors, he asked, people whose very profession it was to understand, empathize with, and act the passions of other people? How natural then that they should be the ones to empathize so very immediately and so totally with the problems of the many people of our society dispossessed of rights because of the color of their skin. Actors, Dr. King said, empathize and understand, and then they can act upon their understanding. Are not Unitarian Universalists, I ask, people whose theology requires that they bring an openness to the lived experience of people? Do they not understand and empathize with and act on the passions they bring to the delirious project of being human? This is, Maxine Klein says, a noble, inspiring idea to carry with you as you set about the task of making yourself a more informed actor, a more informed person. May we prepare. May it be. Blessed be. Amen.